On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, today's episode of the podcast is going to be another group episode. I will have the guys introduce themselves and then we'll get into it. So we'll go Tommy first and then Mike. Just introduce yourselves, name, where you're at, anything relevant, and we'll get into it.
Cool. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you having me on. So like Chris said, my name is Tommy Labriola. I'm a minor league strength coach with the Toronto Blue Jays. Second year in the org, but first year was COVID year 2020. So we all know how that went. But yeah, so first season this year, I was with our high A affiliate, the Vancouver Canadians. We like to call them the Vancouver Canadians of Hillsborough because we were relocated this year. But yeah, so before that, I was an intern at Georgetown University, did a few other internships, University of Pittsburgh, private sector, Salisbury University, was a GA at Salisbury. And all that kind of led to my first job here with the Blue Jays, got brought on in the fall of 2019. And here we are, first season down.
Yeah, so thanks for having us, Chris. I'm Mike Hernandez. I was the low-A strength coach for the Salem Red Sox this year, which is the affiliate for the Boston Red Sox. First season, obviously COVID, kind of same story here with Tommy. But first season, we had a chance to clinch, make the playoffs. Was a great year until it wasn't. You know what? Came down to the last game, 120 games that you would think, you know, the last inning is the most important inning of the season. But, no, that's how it all went down in the first one, and it was a pretty good year. Before that, I was in college. I actually got hired right out of Boston University. And, yeah, that's how I began my career. But I was interning at three different D1 schools before, BU being one of them. I was also working with Harvard and Fordham University. Before that, I was at a private sector gym and kind of just trying to get as much experience everywhere just so I could, you know, pick and choose where I wanted to be and learn as much as I could from all the coaches. And eventually that landed me a job in pro baseball.
Guys, so you both mentioned that this was your first year at an affiliate, and obviously with the COVID season prior, it was kind of a wash. So for the purposes of this podcast, we're going to consider you guys, quote unquote, first year guys. And really the whole kind of basis of this chat is going to be your first year in pro ball, how it went, what you expected, what was different than what you expected. And as we talked about off camera, really just if you could go back in time and give yourself advice before getting into pro ball, the good, the bad, the indifferent, that's kind of the point of this episode. If anybody's listening and they're like, man, I'd love to get into pro ball, I don't know where to start, I don't know what to expect, like this episode should give them a pretty good understanding of what to expect if they do come into pro ball. It's not always all sunshine and rainbows. There are difficult days, there's difficult travel, all of that. And so anything that you guys want to throw in on this, I think is fair game. And so just kind of starting it off, like what specific reasons do you have for wanting to get into pro ball? Was it just something that you wanted to check the box for and experience, or are you guys baseball guys at heart? I'd say Tommy probably kick us off first, and then Mike, and then we can let it roll from there.
Sure. So baseball for me was always the thing. I was always a player, baseball family growing up. So it was just a sport I knew, and the sport has done a lot for me throughout my years, relationships, taught me a lot of things, a lot of hardship, ups and downs. So now to have an opportunity to kind of give back to the sport and make a small impact on the players in the game, what an opportunity that is. So it's just something I wanted to chase and really get into it and get into the trenches and see what I can do to help the sport, make the sport better. And if there's a small positive impact I can make on it, then that's success for me. So it was really just about what can I do to give back to the sport that has given so much to me? And this was my end, and this is the way that I wanted to do it.
Yeah, so for me, I would say, you know, baseball has always been a part of my life. part of my family. I come from a Dominican family, so if anybody knows, it's Dominican Republic is the home of baseball. So grew up playing baseball back and forth in the Bronx and in Dominican Republic as well. It was always the main sport at home, everywhere. So it's kind of a no-brainer. While I was at Harvard, I had a buddy of mine, Cesar Castillo, who ended up working for the Twins. And he was also a Dominican strength coach. And he told me, like, hey, like, this season's been really fun for me. I think it would be something that you really want to do. And I kind of started looking into it, and it made a lot of sense because it's like I played my whole life, and now I'm kind of coming full circle. Like, this just seems like it would be a great fit. So, you know, I started looking around for jobs, and that's kind of how it happened. You know, I speak Spanish, and the guys, I'm familiar with their past and the things that they've gone through because I've always been a part of the game, and I've seen baseball in the Dominican Republic. I've seen baseball in New York, the American way, and it's kind of just something that's like I'm probably destined to do this, and so there it is.
Yeah, I was the same way when I got in. I had played in college, and even like when I got to grad school, it was like right away I wanted to work with baseball. And then my internship, I was at TCU, and Zach had done professional baseball at Salisbury. Matt and I had done a little bit in professional baseball, and they had kind of told me some of the stuff that I'm hoping we get into today. And it wasn't always like, hey, this is great, but it is rewarding. And for me, I was like, no, I want to get into baseball. I love the game of baseball. I've always been around it. And so that kind of leads me into my next question for you guys is any of the previous experiences that you had, did they prepare you for professional baseball in the way that you thought now that you've seen professional baseball, right? Like I said, in college, I did baseball and I was like, oh, okay, I understand training baseball players. And then I got to pro ball and it was like, I don't understand training baseball players. Just dealing with schedule and dealing with everything else, like it kind of was a different game compared to the college game. And I'm curious if you guys felt the same way or if that transition was smooth for you guys.
Yeah, it was definitely like you said, it was a lot different from playing to being a strength coach with baseball in my GA. It's a whole different game, and you got to learn a lot as you go. But for me, you know, I've interned or worked at different levels, Division I, Division III, private sector. So to me, just working with those different levels and those different types of people prepares you best for the sport because you have a lot of different personality types, a lot of different types of people. So the more that you work with, the more different type of people that you're around, the better you're off when you get to this sport. Especially coming from Division III, where, you know, we don't have a budget and we don't have a lot of resources and tools and things like that. So you got to adapt and you got to be creative. I think that was the best experience that I had that led me here, because in pro ball, you never know what you're going to get when you go on the road or what kind of equipment you're going to have. So you got to be creative and you got to adapt. So those small schools, those private sector things, working with all those people and not having much to work with, I think that expanded my knowledge a lot and prepared me for this.
I would say the answer is a little bit of both. So like the structure of college doesn't really prepare you for pro ball, but I was able to take little things from each experience and just life experience in general that helped me. Just being a Spanish speaking coach and understanding those personal experiences that those guys have gone through, that really helped me a lot. But I would say, you know, in college, you don't really have to worry about language barrier. You don't have to worry about the guys' backgrounds. They're coming from all pretty much the same kind of atmosphere. Like those guys have probably been travel ball guys and they've gone through a process where they understand routines and just how to do things. And pro baseball is like, you know what? F that. Here's the empty slate. This guy's never touched a dumbbell before. Teach him. Aside from the weight room stuff, there's just so many things to adjust to in pro ball. I would say, like, it's kind of like any other profession where you're in college and you're learning stuff in the classroom, and the classroom stuff doesn't necessarily prepare you for what it really has to do. Like I always say, unless you're going to be a doctor or an engineer, like, you're not really going to learn what you need at school. You're going to learn it through experience. And I pretty much learned something new everywhere that I went. And I was able to take those little things to translate that into pro ball. But when I got to pro ball, it's like, holy shit, like, this is a whole different ballgame. We got to deal with food. We got to deal with you know, just teaching guys who've never touched a weight. And then you got like the opposite side of it. Like you got guys coming from 4-year colleges that think they know like everything. They think they know what they're doing. They don't need a strength coach. So you got to manage multiple personalities, and that's probably like the biggest thing. But yeah, this, I could go on for hours about that.
We're going to, that's okay. We're going to. No, I would say I agree. Tommy, obviously both having the Salisbury experience, the D3 thing for me was cool because when you go to pro ball, there's the resources are very limited at the lower levels. Sometimes your gym is like a pair of power blocks and a medicine ball and some bands. But at the D3 level, we were able to experience that. We're at Division I, you have 20, 25 racks. Everybody has their own program. Everybody is all set. And then you get to pro ball and it's a big shock. And so I think for me, again, the relevant experience at Salisbury helped me a lot. And then Coach Mike, like you said, is just getting guys in their first time, especially for me. My first year was with the Pirates. I was in the Appy League. And we had some young Dominican kids who had, again, like you said, never touched a weight. And then we had guys coming from like prestigious Division I's, and they had years of, you know, structured program. And just the nature of professional baseball, playing every day, the travel, the schedule, like a lot of the times we wouldn't even have our guys that got drafted lift. And it was like they were trying to sneak lifts in when I wasn't looking. And I was like, I'm telling you, the schedule here is different. It's going to wear you out. And like, you know, at first they're all gung-ho, it's pro ball, they're very excited. And then by the end, they're like, dude, if I was lifting during that time, I would be dead. Like all the volume of playing and practicing every day and traveling and, you know, less than ideal food situations in certain cities. Like, it's really like, it's cliche, but it's a grind, right? Like it's a grind, and it's very difficult, and just adding stress where we don't need to. Sometimes it's better to pull back for those guys, but it's such a wide range of just, you know, the young Dominican kid or the young high school kid and the college kid, and they're all at the same place. And then your first year too, and you're like trying to feel the water and figure things out. And like the first time, like I remember I wore like a Pirates lifting shirt out to dinner one day, and everybody's like, you're going in the box. And I was like, okay, number one, what is the box? And number two, why am I going in it? And they're like, you can't wear this gear outside, dude. And I'm like, nobody told me that. I had no idea. I'm terribly sorry. It won't happen again. Right. So like, you're all kind of learning together, which is cool. But like you said, Coach Mike, you have some of those guys that are like, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing. And it's like, just trust me. Like, you got a long way to go to the big leagues, man. It's your first year. Like, let's ease into this a little bit. Right.
Some of those guys towards the end of the season, they were like, ah, man, you're right. And it was their first season for a lot of guys on my roster as well. And it's like, I should have listened to you. You know, you start dropping your velo, and that's how, a lot of pitchers, like, that's how they're going to respond. You see a velo drop, and they're like, ah, but in college I did this. But, well, you never pitched 120 innings. So, yeah, that's like, they learn as you go, and you'll learn as you go as well. It's a different animal. And I would say one thing is, like, not everyone's going to want your help, you know. You sign up, you think you're going to be, like, in college, you're really a coach. You're really coaching guys up. And not that you're not doing that, but in pro ball, you're more of a stress manager. You know, you have to manage things, not necessarily focus on coaching a specific thing or just working on one thing at a time, because you might not have time for that. But not everyone is going to want your help. They are pro baseball athletes. They are pro athletes, not pro lifters. So not everybody even wants to be in the gym. You can't take it personal. Some guys don't really want to be helped. And in college, guys are there and they want to keep their scholarships. Like, you get some bad apples, but for the most part, everybody understands because they want to go pro or they want to keep their scholarship. In pro ball, some guys think like, hey, I'm good enough. I got $1 million signing bonus. I don't need to be in the gym. Or, you know, whatever their reason is, some guys are not going to think they need the help. So you can't really take it personal if they don't want to be helped and you really want to do the best that you can to help them. So that's another thing.
Yeah, Tommy, did you have any experiences with guys that were just totally like, I'm not doing weight room stuff? Like Mike said, in college, it's most guys are pretty gung-ho. There's a few that, you know, you have to kind of drag along, hold their hand. But like you said, in pro ball, it's kind of their choice, right? It's their career. I mean, to an extent. But did you have any experiences with that at your place, or was everybody all in?
Definitely had those experiences. Like, our team was made up of a lot of guys, almost all of them. It was their first full season playing also. So we were both, you know, from a coaching side and a playing side, we're all learning together, like Mike said. And there's definitely those guys that either think they know exactly what they need, they know their routines, and they don't want your help, or they're the open kind that have their routines and they want to bounce ideas off of you. But again, like that's part of the challenges, and it's all about developing relationships with those guys. And maybe the guys that don't want your help, maybe you learn something from them. Maybe they have a guy back home in the off season that helps them out a lot. And sometimes they spend more time with them than they do with you. So that's a good opportunity to communicate with them and maybe learn something that you didn't know about that player. So the guys that don't want to touch weights or don't want anything or coaching, I look at that as an opportunity to learn something about them and not so much as just a challenge.
Yeah, and I would say now that I've I've been in pro ball for a few years and I've kind of worked my way up, is that is an important aspect, right? Is there are guys that have those off-season guys that they go to. And for us, the off-season is the most important part of, you know, it's uninterrupted training, right? And if they put that much stake into that person and helping them in that important part of their time, like, it probably helps us to meet that person, to discuss things with that person, and then all get on the same page, because we have them for so long, right? 120 games, 140 games, 162 games, whatever it is, we're going to be around them. So it's either we're going to be fighting them for that long and deal with the headache, or we can all get on the same page and try to help them one way or the other. And some guys just don't like the weight room, and some guys that, I mean, they might not need the weight room, right? Like, it might be something else that they need. They might need something on the field, or that, whatever it is, we can help them, right? And I agree with you, Tommy. It's just working to build those relationships with guys, working to figure out what they need, and doing whatever we can to help them. And like you said, Mike, is in pro ball, we're stress managers, right? So there's a lot of other things that are going into performance other than just increasing their squat max, increasing their deadlift max, right? And I think when I was in college, and Tommy, you can attest to this because you were one of my athletes, it was like, we're just going to get as strong as we can. We're going to become absolute freaks, right? And in college setting, it feels like it's like that, right? Like, everybody wants to increase their squat and their deadlift and their bench and their chin-ups and their sprint times because they think it's going to help them hit more bombs and hit more doubles. And it's not always the case in pro ball. More times than not, it's not, right? Like, we're not trying to raise a guy squat max 50 pounds in season at the cost of stressing him for something else, and then he can't go out on the field and play. So, like you said, Mike, because they play every day, they practice every day, we're a lot more stress managers. And so our goals are a little different. And if we can make that clear with players, I think it helps us get them to buy into us as people, as coaches, and long-term, like, especially for you guys, right? And it was the same for me, like, first year in pro ball, you're at a lower level. Those guys are in the org, you get to see them develop. So if you can set them off on the right foot early with you, that helps them as they progress through their career. And you can kind of watch them. And it's, again, this was your first year, but you'll see 5-6 years down the road, some of the guys that you work with now in the big leagues, and you're like, that guy started with me. Like, it's a cool feeling for sure.
Yeah. I think one of the best things too is when you get a guy that doesn't really want your help at the start, maybe halfway through the season, he starts coming to you and he's like, hey, what do you got for me today? And that makes you start to understand that you're breaking that barrier and you're starting to build trust with him. And then maybe next year, if you have the same guy at whatever level you're at, you're starting from a really good spot and you might be able to start influencing his program or his routines a little bit more. But always a good feeling when you get one of those guys start to come ask you for things.
Yeah, Chris, I think I had a small group of those guys that came from college that are like, you know, I want to increase my max. I want to do this. I want to do that. Those guys started out all the way up here. And as the season went on, it was just like, I just got run over by a truck. Like, what do you got for me? And that's when they started shifting because, you know, they realized, you know, we get paid for a reason, and we do what we do because we're qualified for it, and we're the people responsible. So, yeah, you just got to manage a lot of different personalities, and that's something that college doesn't really teach you. I've noticed that on the teams that I worked with in college, the team kind of takes on the personality of the strength coach, and you basically have all the fixed variables. It's kind of a controlled environment, whereas pro ball is like taking it into the real world, or there's so many factors that are changing constantly every single day, and you really got to adjust. Whereas, like, I would say, not that college is easy, but I would say college is like the ideal setting for any of your programs or anything that you want to do weight room wise. Whereas there's, you can't really plan a program for 4 months and expect to have the same equipment for a full season in baseball. There's no chance.
I was just talking to our head guy about that yesterday, about how college is like very structured, right? You don't play as many games. Like, the starters have a longer, routine before, like, they have a 7-day routine versus 5-day routine here, and just how being able to develop players over, 4 years or whatever you have them for in college, and like, you can lay out a 4-year program for them and start like plugging and playing with guys, and you can't do that here. It's a totally, totally different thing. And it's awesome that that you guys got to break down some barriers with some guys, and you're learning on the fly with guys, and it's really eye opening. The first year in pro ball is really eye opening, and for me, I did not want to come back after my first year. I was like, I'm good. I've seen it. This is not what I expected. I left, and then I was at home, and I was doing some private setting stuff. And to your point earlier, Mike, is like, I wanted to try everything just so that I could figure out what I really wanted to do. And it was like, I enjoyed the private setting, but I just missed being around the team. And I missed like just, the long bus rides and the, staying at America's Value Inn or whatever. Just, there was something about it that like, we're all a little off, right? Like, for us to be in pro ball and to enjoy it, like, we're all a little bit off in one way or the other. And so I was like, man, I got to get back in. I got to try it again. I think there's just something that I missed, and I'm very thankful I did now. Obviously it's paid off for me. But in terms of advice for others, before we get into like the really nitty gritty of minor league baseball, like, do you guys have advice for others who want to get in, or like I said, people that are listening now that are like on the fence about pro ball, like, do I get in? Do I not? Like, do you have advice to say, yes, you should get in? And if you do want to get in, how do you get in?
I think one of the biggest things that someone who's looking to get into pro ball needs to really understand is that communication is going to be your best friend. Over a season where you're going through spring training and then you go into 120, 140 games in a minor league season, the better you are communicating with your players, the better off they're going to be, and especially listening. You get a lot of smart guys that do understand their bodies and their training, and maybe they've gone through it before. And there's some smart players out there that really understand what we're trying to accomplish. So being able to listen to them, learn something from them, and communicate with them, if you guys are on the same page and you're a strong pair working together, that's going to go extremely far. And then you talk about the language barrier, learning Spanish, whether it's through an app or class or talking with somebody else who knows Spanish, is going to go a long way too, because you want to be able to build relationships and communicate with everybody, not just the guys that you know the language. So that's one of the biggest things that helped me is being able to communicate, even if it's not being fluent just yet, but even if it's queuing in the weight room or being able to understand and ask them questions about their personal life so you can start building relationship there. Communication, English, Spanish, and all the languages has been extremely helpful for me. So I encourage anybody who wants to get into professional baseball, make sure the communication skills are there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would say, if you think learning Spanish is hard, just give an effort. If guys see that you're giving an effort, like, they're going to think, oh, this guy's cool. Like, that'll automatically get all the Latin guys to love you. And if you got their side, you got a lot, but I would say a big thing is having feel. You're gonna hear that a lot if you get in the baseball world. Just, are you a guy that has feel, or are you gonna try to stick and be by the book on everything? It's not gonna work out. Just the amount of interaction that you're gonna have with your staff outside of whatever it is you want to do in the strength conditioning, weight room side of things, you need to have feel overall above everything else, because at the end of the day, we're here for baseball. We're kind of like Chris Paul in that State Farm commercial, born to assist. Like, you got to be okay stepping into that role, because ultimately that's what you are. In the college sector, it's kind of all about you. You run the team. But in pro ball, you're going to be the assist man, and I mean, you're going to be counted on to keep these guys healthy, but that's pretty much all you got. You're not really going to be running the show, so you got to be okay with it, and you just got to have feel.
That's a really good point. Just college versus pro, and again, sometimes it's easier just to experience it than like to talk about it and hear it, but I would agree 100%. Like in college, you said the team takes on the strength coach's personality. Like if you're a high energy guy, you get after it. Like the team tends to follow. Here, like most of the time, players don't care that you even lift or not. Like, it's a weird dynamic. And then, like you said, there's, you know, you have your weight room responsibilities, but like you're a mental skills guy in the minor leagues, right? And you have to like talk with the coaching staff to like keep them level headed sometimes, and you have to keep like the schedule in line and like make sure everybody's at stretch on time and like do the conditioning and this, and there's a ton of other things. It's you're kind of behind the scenes in the college setting. You're very behind the scenes in the pro setting. It's very like, take a step back, put your ego aside, and understand that you're the really small part of the puzzle. You're a very important part, right, and like keeping everything running smoothly, but you are not like the guy here. Like it's just, you're just another person on the team, another person on the staff. And if you have feel, like Mike said, and you kind of just blend in really nicely, you'll have no issues. Now, the funny thing is, before I got into pro ball, I had no idea what having feel is. I had never heard it. I didn't know what it was. And so for any listeners that are here with us that don't know what having feel is, give us an example where you guys had some feel, where guys like good feel, they cheered you on, and then maybe an example where guys like, dude, have some feel, like you messed this one up. Like, give me an example of one, the other, or both.
Oh man, so an example of having feel, let's see, it was, you know, late in the season, it's you know, hot out, we play on turf, so it's even hotter every day, and guys come in the weight room before stretch and do a lot of individual prep work and soft tissue and stuff like that, so they got a good warm-up in already, and they come out and you can tell everybody knows it's hot, we're tired. So instead of doing a full team dynamic, I let them go on and do their individual prep on their own and an individual stretch on the line, and the guys just, it was like a whole celebration. And I think after that, one of the players called me King Feel. And I tell you what, being called King Feel by some pro baseball players means a lot. You'll understand that if you get into pro ball. So that was an example of having feel and just understanding. I think a lot of describing feel is really hard to do, but it's, I think overall, it's just having an understanding of what's going on and having an awareness of what's happening around you.
Yeah, I mean, got plenty of situations, but a similar one. I mean, I won't let them run their own, but we'll do a center field and back, and a center field and back will get you, wow, what a feel. And The guys love it. They start racing back. You might even get more effort on a center field and back than you would if you just ask them to go through it normally. So, yeah, another situation is like you got a doubleheader, maybe a doubleheader next day. Just a situation where we had four games canceled this year, and it was like, okay, lift is going to be kind of mobility stretch type of thing today, and everyone's like, all right, this is great, fantastic, because we got four games in the next 2 days, no chance I'm going to get under a barbell. That's a situation where you got to have some feel, you know, program says this is what you got today, there's no way we're going to be able to do that. Guys are going to be pissed off if you're asking them to go do a set of threes on tri-bar deadlift or squat. Another thing is like do we have a gym boss at 10 a.m. after a game that ended in the 12th inning at 1 a.m., 2 a.m.? Or do we just cancel a gym boss that day? You know, we might show up a little later to the field and do something right before. So that's big. Like, guys don't really want to get up at 10 a.m. for a gym boss after a doubleheader. That's a feel thing right there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before we get into gym buses and the nitty gritty, I'll give you an example where I did not have feel, and I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I've messed up. We've all messed up. So I was in double A. I don't remember what year it was. Maybe 16, probably 2016. We had a doubleheader before the All-Star break. So basically, like, instead of playing the extra day before the All-Star break, we had a doubleheader the day before so that we had an extra day off. And pretty much everybody's mailed it in, right? It's All-Star break. Like, everybody's pumped. Like, two quick sevens, and then we're out of there, right? So I want to say it was later in the day. I had the guy's condition that day. It was like 10, 30 yard sprints. Nothing, you know, nothing crazy, right? Like, very simple. It takes 5 minutes. I got so much shit for it. I got worn out, like, after the All-Star break, you know, towards the end of the season, guys, like, you remember when you made us run doubleheader day before All-Star break? Good for you. Like, nice job. Yeah. Way to go. You know? Mm-hmm. So, I think there is a point where you may have too much feel, right? Like, you become the too much feel guy. And we're really tired today, Poppy. You know what? All right, center fielding back again. It's like your third or fourth one in the week. And guys are like, you know, they start abusing it, and they kind of sense some weakness. Like, you still have to put your foot down on things. So you don't want to be the ultimate feel, like, too much, but you don't want to be, like, you know, a dictator either. You have a program that comes from your coordinator or your big league guys or your director, whoever that's coming from, and you try to stick to it as much as you can. But there are days where you have to go off script, and that's why you're at the affiliate, right? That's why they pay you. That's why you're hired, is they trust that you're going to get the program done, but they also trust that you can read the room a little bit and have some court awareness and just have a feel for how things are going. So you got to kind of lie somewhere in the middle. Don't be like me and make them condition on a doubleheader day the day before an All-Star break. But you don't want to do seven center field and backs in a week either. Like, there's got to be a sweet spot where they're still getting their work done. But like you guys said, when you do hit the field button at the right time, like, the effort actually goes up because you're like, all right, you're on your own. And guys are like, let's go. Like, all of a sudden the energy in the room just increases. Or like you said, Mike, you cancel a gym bus, you know, after a 12 inning game for 10 o'clock, and guys are like the happiest people in the world, you know, like, managers coming in, like, patting you on the back, like, good decision, dude. Nice job. But so that kind of leads me into this, right? Is, like, in terms of just minor league grind stuff, one of the big things is, like, gym buses, right? And in the big leagues up here, we have a gym at home, obviously, but we also have a gym on the road at every stadium, right? So we don't have to worry about gym bus. Like, when guys come to the field, they can come into the gym, they can get pretty much same routine home and road. Like, we have enough equipment. The minor leagues is not the case. And I think a lot of people listening that don't know pro ball won't know that, right? Like, when you're in the minor leagues, you may have a gym at home. It's probably pretty inadequate. And then when you go on the road, you have to set up gym buses at local places. You work out with, like, you know, general population. Like, when I was in the Appy League, we used a Planet Fitness for a baseball team of 25 grown men, you know, and it's like, if you want to set off the lunk alarm in a Planet Fitness, just bring 20, 25 baseball players in at 10 a.m., right? Like, so talk to me about difficulties that you had this year, what you had to adjust to, what you might have expected or not expected that caught you off guard. Just kind of, like, run through the minor league life for you guys in your first year. And we could just, we'll let this one run for a little while. We might talk for a while here.
For sure. I think for me, it was interesting from the start because, you know, we're supposed to play in Vancouver at our home stadium. And obviously we were not allowed to at all this year for all the games. So we were relocated to Hillsboro, Oregon, and split the stadium with the Hillsboro Hops. And so from the start, we had to basically create our home away from home. And the front office did a really good job for us there. You know, we had our own clubhouse and the weight room, pretty much everything from the Vancouver weight room was shipped down to Hillsborough. And I got there and there were two 10 foot wide by 30 foot long tents with some mats, and basically had to just set up the weight room under those tents. So from there it was grab the clubbies and we just threw a bunch of stuff out there and tried to fit it the way we could. So it was just a year of getting creative for sure. Cause you know, you're the entire year at home, we were lifting outside under tents. You know, at the beginning of the year we had to deal with some rain, and then fortunately it didn't rain once again from like the second week all the way until the second to last day. So we were pretty fortunate enough there, but still you're outside. It can get hot in there. Luckily we had some turf to work with, but yeah, just from the start, lifting under tents was a curveball for sure. But on the road, you know, this year, cause of COVID, we weren't allowed to use public gyms and lift with the general public. So we had to coordinate with the strength coach of the home side and use their weight room. So that's where the field comes into play. Cause sometimes the guys are getting up at 9 to get on the bus after a late night, and that can be really challenging, and you got to find ways to make it enjoyable for them, because you don't always want to be the bad guy making them get up early all the time. So there are a couple road trips where I wanted to make sure I got the guys some sleep, so I essentially brought a weight room on the road, had our travel trunk with everything. I brought barbell, trap bar, plates, heavy kettlebells, and we would just set up an outdoor gym outside whatever clubhouse we were. Sometimes we're lifting on the sidewalk, and you got fans rolling into the game and there's a group of pitchers getting a lift in. So definitely a grind. When it comes to food, luckily for me, I had a dietitian who was awesome. He was there for a home series and he traveled with us everywhere, and he was great. He did all the food scheduling. So that was one less thing that I had to worry about. And I was extremely fortunate to have him along for the ride. So he took care of all that, but we did well. Definitely a grind being relocated and dealing with the COVID restrictions.
Yeah. So, I mean, before I begin, I'm by no means affiliated with this page, but I would say go ahead and follow Minor League Grinders on Instagram, and you're going to see some of these things that we talk about. For anyone that's looking to join, if I would have seen this page beforehand, like, that would be just a great insight into what's going to go on in minor league baseball. So for 99% of the season, I was just carrying my own gym around. I got this huge box I lug around, maybe weighs like 300 pounds. Guys hate it. When they get assigned the trunk, they hate seeing the trunk list on the bus. Yeah, you need like four people to get on there. It's a workout in itself. But yeah, I was packing that thing heavy, and it gives us a little more time to sleep and show up to the ballpark. This is a true story. First week of the season, we're away at Delmarva, and we're pulling in, and there's absolutely like, there's like no space to lift there. It's just a huge parking lot. Nowhere that you can attach anything, just a bunch of nothing. I'm like, damn, how are we gonna get a lift in out here? We can probably just do sprints out here. There's not really anywhere my attachments can go on. So we end up lifting by the dumpsters. This is the most minor league thing ever. You got three big dumpsters full of trash. They stink, but there's also like a little mound right next to the dumpsters, like an artificial mound, like a little turf area. I'm like, wow. All right, so we're working on by the dumpsters. That became like our gym. Every day is to the gym. It's outside by the dumpsters. So yeah, you got to be able to adjust. I literally had to find little spots like that everywhere. At home, we're lucky enough, we had like a decent sized gym. Only one squat rack. So for college guys, that's probably gonna disappoint you coming from a place where you got maybe 18 squat racks. We got one squat rack. Everyone's working off of it. So at home, things are pretty smooth. We have, let's say a set of cables, three benches, a squat rack, a glute ham raise, and you know, your basics. It's a small, typical gym. But on the road, you really got to improvise. And if you're not okay with thinking on the fly, I maybe had 10 minutes to figure it out where we were going to lift. You know, the manager says we're starting at 3. We're getting out at 2. You got to think these guys are going to change and do whatever it is they do for 10 minutes, but you got to get on their ass right as soon as they're done. They need to go lift and you got to go find a place. So my mind's going like, mind you, first week ever. So my mind's like racing, like, where am I going to put this thing? So yeah. The rest of the season, it went pretty smoothly. We only really had to use other gyms when we had like a 2-week road trip. We're away for 14 days, like, let's get on the bar at once. But we were able to work it out where, you know, everyone was able to get their work in on the road with bands. We got power blocks. Power blocks were key this year. We got them midway through the season. Put the order in as soon as we got there, and it took like 4 or 5 months to get there. Not surprising. But yeah, it was good on that side. From a food standpoint, that's probably where the big headaches are. Just because we don't have a dietitian that travels with us. And then sometimes we use like third-party caterers, and you're not able to communicate with them. If it ever happens to you, you know how bad the situation is, where you can't call the delivery to change the time. Our manager will say, hey, we're going to have a late report tomorrow. Sounds great. But the food can't be changed because third-party deliverer doesn't give you a number. And now nobody has a number. This guy's going to still go pick it up at that time. And now all of a sudden, clubhouse is pissed off because the food's not there on time. And not really much you can do about it. Yeah, but, I mean, I had a great manager. I was with Luke Montz this year. And Montz is the man. You know, he's Mr. Ultimate Feel. Like, you know, we had a great staff. And just a lot of flexibility and just a game of adjustments all year long. So food is probably the number one thing that I didn't expect to be as much a burden as it was. Even though, I did have a conversation with you, Chris, before the season started, food-wise, like last year in spring training. I knew it was going to be a pretty big part, but I just didn't know how wrong things could go. I make it seem like everything went wrong, but we had some good times, we had some bad times, you know. It didn't get too bad where, like, we never had no food, but things get real scary real fast when you got 30 guys asking you where the food is, and you have no idea either. It's like, we have a registered dietitian, so she's overseeing things. She's placing the orders, and if you don't know where that order's coming from, you kind of just paid for it, and you know it's going to be at that time, and it's not. Now you're like, damn, I got to get answers. They need answers. And everybody's just coming to you like, yo, where's the food at? So, I mean, communication is key 100%, especially when it comes to that. That's the big thing, you know. Some guys might not lift that day. Everybody's eating every day. So that's – if you really want to get in a pro ball, figure out how to order stuff real fast. There was one day where – I guess the catering company canceled from – it was Easy Cater. And they, like, canceled last minute. You can submit an order. It'll say accepted. And then, like, an hour later, it'll say, oh, your order's not – like, it's invalid. And they won't send you an alert or anything. So you don't even know. So you're, like, planning this order's going to be there. Then the time comes. There's no order. You check it. It says order was not approved or whatever it is. And now all of a sudden you got to call Tropical Smoothie and order a bunch of smoothies and, like, sandwiches that can be made quickly. I was blessed with the clubbies this year. Most of the clubbies in my league were fantastic. They would help me out with food delivery, picking up, or whatever it is. And luckily, we were able to pivot right away. I don't even really want to talk about that situation just because it gets me going a little bit. But, establishing good relationships with clubbies is going to be a huge thing, especially in minor league ball, when those are the guys that you really need to help you out.
Yeah, so Tommy, you don't have to worry about the food. You're very, very lucky. So anybody that's listening that, again, is not in pro ball, doesn't know, some organizations will have RDs at the affiliates, some won't. And the ones that don't, it usually falls on the strength coach to take care of the food. And so you're calling restaurants, you're setting up catering, you're making sure pregame and postgame are delivered. And one of the things that I learned really fast is, like, when it says serves 30 to 40 people, that's not the same as serves 30 to 40 baseball players, right? Like, it, you almost have to double that order just for, you know, these guys are monsters, right? They're all athletes, they're professional athletes, and they're big dudes. And the game of baseball itself is just getting bigger, right? Like, guys are getting bigger, getting stronger. They're taking their training, their body's more serious. And so, you know, a 4-ounce chicken breast that might be fine for my dad or, you know, just somebody, you know, in the general public is not enough for that player, right? Like, they're going to eat 4 of those chicken breasts and not think twice about it. So I'm very, very, I'm jealous that you don't have to do the food, Tommy. But at the same time, like, there is something to be said about, like, thinking on your toes and getting creative and finding ways. But like you said, Mike, everybody eats every day, right? And the food, if the food is good and the clubhouse is clean, guys are usually pretty happy, right? Like, if their laundry gets done the way they think it should, like, it's
on time and it's dry.
Right. The guys are happy, right? And if the food's there on time and the food's good. But every day you are going to have some sort of either, dude, where's the food? Or, dude, the food wasn't good? Or, oh, we should have done this. Like, every single day. And for me, a lot of the times in the minor leagues, like, my best days were when the food was good, right? Like, I could go back to the hotel and I could just smile and be like, we did good with food today. And, like, again, it's, you know, you want to be a strength coach. You want to be in the weight room. You want to be on the field. You want to help. But in the bigger picture, like, your impact comes in a lot of different ways. And sometimes it's having good food for the guys. And I know, like, if you're listening, it's like, well, I'm not an RD, right? Like, food shouldn't be my responsibility. Well, here it is. In a lot of places in pro ball, it is. It's just part of the culture of baseball. It's part of how it is. And again, it's one of those things that if you don't know and it catches you off guard. And then, like you said, Mike, you and I had talked about it. And even talking about it is not enough. Like, until you're there and that order gets canceled and guys are coming off the field in 15 minutes and there's no food to be found and you have to figure something out, it's different. Like, it's something that you won't experience anywhere else. And then the other thing you bring up is clubbies. And I would assume most people that are listening know the clubbies, but if you've never been in pro ball, like, you don't. Clubby might not register to you, right? And it's just a clubhouse manager. They help oversee the food. They help with the laundry. They help cleaning. They help with, you know, loading and unloading buses. And so, to your point, Mike, I think it's huge to have good relationships with the clubbies, especially in the minor leagues. It's usually one clubby with, like, a couple young kids helping out. And if you can get off on the right foot and build a good relationship and, hey, how can I help you make this easier? Let me help you take the bags off the bus, or let me help you do this. When the time comes when you're going to need their help, and you will at some point, it just makes that relationship easier, right? If you have a tough relationship with the clubby, it makes it really, really hard to, like, have a smooth series. And something that was new for you guys this year was those 6-game series, right? Like, we had never done that when I was in the minor league. So if you're going to spend a whole week with that clubby, you better be on the same page for sure.
So I was lucky. A lot of the clubbies were young in my league, the younger guys, and we were able to get along right away. So plenty of times where you need the clubby to pick up food just because an order was messed up or anything. We always had food. It wasn't always on time on the road. So, you know, if you got a clubby that's willing to go pick up food, like, he's your MVP for that day. He literally just patched a huge hole that you were going to get destroyed by those guys if the food wasn't ready. So yeah, clubbies are huge. I remember a conversation we had, Chris, where you told me, you know, you can't let your highs be too high and your lows be too low. So I try to keep that model of consistency all throughout the year and never really take it personal if guys don't like the food. And I think back to our conversation where you said, you know, there's 3 groups of guys, and I started to see as the season went on, like, there's always going to be that 3 groups of guys, like, guys that really like the food, guys are indifferent, and then the group of guys that just, they don't like it. And unfortunately, I had a super picky group where these guys, a bulk of that group didn't eat tomatoes. No one ate tomatoes. I've never been anywhere where, like, people are so fearful of eating tomatoes. So no tomatoes, no lettuce, no whole wheat, anything. No pico, no onions. No onions. and even I could, this might even extend to staff. I don't want to out them, but you know, some staff, no onions, no, none of that. So you can't have anything. And then there's a handful of guys like absolutely no vegetables. If they see them, there's no chance they're going to touch the food. So it's like, you got a locker room like that. Normally you'd say, okay, let me just get them what they like. But you also got a registered dietitian now who's overseeing food, and you can't necessarily just get big back ribs every day or whatever it is, you know, regardless of whether you have the money or not. We're trying to make healthier choices, but these guys won't eat any of those things. So you got to fight the picking. At some point, you got to put your foot down, but if you have 25 meals left, you're not necessarily helping the cause here. So that's another thing. You're dealing with guys who have different palates. You know, you might order Latin food one day, and then a group of guys can say, hey, I can't eat this. Like, what is this? And then the Latin guys are going to be, oh, this is great. I love it, Bobby. Keep it going. But, you know, you can't make everybody happy. And if you're some type of person that takes things personal, then it ain't going to work out for you. Whereas, like, you know, some of the best days, like you said, were when food was great. But, you know, if it wasn't great, then tomorrow's a new day. You know, the good thing about this game is that there's always tomorrow. Our pitching coach always says that. He preaches that. You know, there's always tomorrow. We got 120 games to get it right. So it'll happen. I would say one of the worst feelings is losing a game and the food is late or you know, food is not exactly the best and you happen to just get destroyed that day. You know the food's not going to be good because you don't even really like it. You go in there and everyone's just like just pissed, absolutely pissed off because you lost a game and not only the food's not even, you know, and you'll see guys get their phones, try to order Chipotle or something because they're not going to want to eat it. So that just makes you feel horrible. But like I said, you don't lose sleep over.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm very fortunate to not have to coordinate all the food and stuff, but there was a lot of points throughout the year where I became that buffer between our dietitian and the players where, you know, if they weren't liking the food, they would say something to me. And, or if the food was late, they'd be like, where's the food? Where's the food? And I'm like, hey, you know, Jeff can't handle if he goes to Jimmy John's and the food's late, you know, that's, he goes there. And there was one road trip where he went out and Jimmy John's ran out of bread. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. So it was just being that buffer between me and him and the team and making sure they understood that, you know, just cause it's the food, there's certain things you can't control all the time. But you know, funny story about minor league grinders, like you were talking about earlier in the season, we have a player who would eat a banana in a bowl with protein powder sprinkled on top by choice. And one of our other players put it on Instagram, tagged minor league grinders and said pregame spread. And that kid caught a lot of crap because we were like, man, do you realize how bad this makes us look? This guy's eating this by choice and it makes our dietitian look like we're feeding protein powder and bananas. So yeah, minor league grinders is a funny page, but you never know what you're actually getting on there.
Take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I had one guy that by choice, he would go, we could have Jersey Mike's hot subs ready. Nope. He would go grab slices of white bread, mayo, ketchup, peanut butter. Boom. I have no idea where he picked that up. Because I would say it's a Dominican thing, but it's not. Never seen it in my family. And just not a cultural thing. No idea where he learned it. It's eye-opening what these guys will eat and what they won't eat. You won't eat tomatoes, but you'll eat a ketchup, mayo, and peanut butter sandwich. Like this freaking sirloin steak. Unbelievable.
It will definitely it'll open your eyes, right? And I think this has been a good talk for us to kind of let people see, like, hey, this is what it is, right? There's good, there's bad, there's funny, there's terrifying, right? But what has been the best part so far for you? You guys just finished your first full season, right? Like, looking back, reflecting, what was either your favorite part or just your best part of just the job as a whole, or specifically, you know, the group you're with or whatever, just what makes you smile the most about this season?
I think it's just the people that you're surrounded with. You're with those, that same group of people every day for 6 months on end, and you become so close with them, and you start to learn things about them, and you become close with your staff and your friends with your staff members, and the players open up to you about a lot of things too, because you have so much time to have conversations with them, whether it's in hotels, bus trips, or you're just hanging out before a game. My favorite part is just getting to know all those people and meeting some incredible people and building those relationships and going on road trips and meeting other strength coaches and getting time to connect with them and learn about what they do. It's just the best part for me has been meeting the amount of people and developing relationships with those people. It's just been so much fun and makes you appreciate what you have sometimes, especially when you start to build relationships with people, not from America and from Dominican Republic or Venezuela. And you see pictures of what they do when they go back and videos of their weight room that might just be on a dirt floor with a couple plates. And it really makes you appreciate what you have. And that's been the best part for me, is connecting with the people that you're surrounded by.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd say like just building those relationships with those guys every single day, players and staff, because, you know, I think my staff was amazing this year. But yeah, you build lifelong relationships with these guys, and not just you. Like, my girlfriend would come into town, and she would sit with my manager's wife, and all of a sudden you got lifelong friends there. You know, they keep in touch, and you're going to work with these guys every single day. But it's not just work. Like, I also lived with our fourth coach and my athletic trainer. Like, we were living together outside of, so it's just like building that family, and then just seeing the work that players are able to put in and seeing their growth. I was fortunate enough to have one of my players go on a top 100 list this year. He wasn't there to begin the year. And it was just amazing to see his growth over the course of the season. It was night and day. And just seeing those players put that work in and achieve the goals that they want to achieve. Obviously they're not the big league level yet, but as long as you leave the jersey in a better place, like, that's what puts a smile on my face. Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the season, you got guys who leave you batting gloves or leave you this and that and say, you know, appreciate everything you've done for me this season. I know we've had some rough patches, and you're going to have them all season. You know, it's a long year. At some point, everyone is going to get on each other, no matter who it is. Like, you're just going to have those days where you're fed up and the mood isn't great, even if you're winning, because, you know, we were a winning ball club and things are still going on. So just knowing that you played a role in these guys' careers and helped them to get to the next level is, you know, for me.
Yeah, like you said, you build lifelong relationships, right? Lifelong friendships. And just, you know, if you can look at me as yourselves, you know, first year guys, and then see me as like a future you, right? Like, there are still guys that I had in rookie ball that I still talk to, right? Like, my manager with them is with the Twins now in the big leagues, and when we play them, you know, I get to talk to him, whatever, and it's awesome, right? Like, you, there really, really are like real relationships, right? And as you guys mentioned, we spend so much time together with these guys that part of it is it's, you know, that makes it real, is that there are those difficult times, right? Like, I would be hard to find a relationship where it's like, it's all good all the time, right? It just doesn't happen in a real relationship, right? Like, it's raw, it's emotional. There are good days, there are bad days. Some guys come to you and they hate you one day, and then the next day they love you. And then it's just all part of it. And I think both of you have alluded to this, is right, is like, you can't take anything personal, right? And there are things that are outside of your control that are, big parts of these guys' lives, whether they have kids or they have wives or they miss their family, they're away, you know, it's all part of it. And sometimes they take it out on you. And if you don't take it personal and you understand that, listen, this guy's going through a rough patch, I can help him. In the long run, that makes it real special with those guys. And, you know, in 5 years from now, you're going to, like I said, you're going to see some of these guys in the big leagues, and they're going to remember you, and they're going to be like, dude, remember when we were in Salem and we did this, or when we were in Hillsborough, we were supposed to be in Vancouver that year. Do you remember that, dude? Like, we were out on the turf. It was 100 degrees, and you you let us have a stretch on our own, right? It's the things that you don't think twice about, like they remember and they bring it up and you're like, damn, dude, I do remember that. That was awesome, right? And I really, really appreciate you guys being open about your first years, and I wish that, you know, you guys can have success in this game forever and enjoy it or whatever endeavors you guys choose to do. But I promise you, years down the road, the guys that you're with now will always remember the impact that you had on them and that you came to the ballpark and you tried to help them and you had their best interests in heart. Before we shut this one down, is there anything that you guys want to finish with, whether it's, you know, closing thoughts or anything that we might have missed? Just, you know, final words here and then we'll shut it down and I'll let you guys go.
Yeah, I think the you can't take anything personal is one of the best things you can tell yourself every day. And especially at the end of the year, there's, in my opinion, there's nothing better than when one of your athletes comes to you at the end of the year and gives you a hug and says, thank you for everything you've done for me. You can have highs and you can have lows, but when things like that happen, it makes you really understand why you do what you do. Especially in a sport like this, where there's so many games, there's so much development to be had and so much influence you can have on these players. When they start to appreciate it and they give you feedback and they just say, thank you, man, that means a lot. So I think that's one thing to understand is no matter how rocky the road can be sometimes in minor league baseball, if you stay the course and you stay consistent to yourself, your players are going to gravitate around you. You're going to rub off on them. And at the end of the year, they're always going to be appreciative of what you do. So I think understanding that going in and keeping that in the back of your head goes a long way.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, a big thing about being in pro baseball is being consistent every day and just don't look at the end of the year. You know, like take it day by day. Times where I took it day by day, I felt like I was a lot happier. You know, if you're that type of person that wants to know this 3 weeks down the line, it's not really going to work. You got to be able to make adjustments. You got to be flexible. Every day is going to be a new adventure. Because you might have everything planned for the day and now you have a rain delay or you have something else going on. Game gets canceled for whatever reason or who knows. You just never know minor league baseball. Don't get married to routine. I know baseball is about having routines, but you can't, you're the one guy who has to be able to make adjustments. Make adjustments and just try to have as much fun as you can with all your guys. That's really what it's about. You know, baseball is a game for kids, you know, a game that kids play. And we get to do this as adults. We're not really playing, but we get to be a part of that game. So in the end of the day, fun is what it's all about. You start having fun, start winning more. Everything just becomes a lot better.
Guys, I appreciate you spending over an hour with me talking about this. And I know the listeners are going to be appreciative of this. And, you know, guys that have been around or girls that have been around in pro ball for a while and they listen to this, they're going to smile thinking back of some of those minor league stories that they have. And the coaches that aren't in yet are going to be very appreciative of you guys giving, you know, such a good view of professional baseball. I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. And now, enjoy your off seasons, right? You guys have earned an off season. You guys have gone through a full season. You've gone through the grind. Like, enjoy that off season. And I'll be in touch with you guys soon. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Sure. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, everybody. That concludes this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this one. I thought this was a very, very open, honest look into the first year of a minor league strength and conditioning coach in professional baseball. And so if you're a listener who's not in but you're interested in getting in, this is a great episode for you. I hope you took a lot. And if you've been around in the game for a while, I hope you got a couple good laughs and a couple good smiles just thinking back on some of the old times when you were a first-year strength coach as well. Three things that I took from the guys in this episode. Don't take anything personal. Experience can teach you what the classroom cannot. And communication and relationship building will help you immensely in this setting. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.